Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Other Banana podcast. This is Complicator, aka Deepak, and I have on the pod with me pod regulars Ananta. Hi, Ananta.
Hi, Deepak.
And Adi. Hey, Adi.
Hey.
So the film for this episode is the recent Mammootty release, Kannur Squad. It's just been released on Hotstar, where you can stream it, and on Hulu for those outside of India in the United States. While we will be talking about Kannur Squad and Mammootty and the performances there, there's a lot of thematic similarities between Kannur Squad and two other films, Rajiv Ravi's Kuttavum Sikshayum and Dheeran Adhigaram Ondru, which, for the folks who have seen those three films, they'll notice that there's some similarities across those three. And so we're going to talk about those three, and you'll hear references to, we'll talk about Kannur Squad, and you'll hear about references to those other two films quite frequently, because they do stand as really good companion pieces. And so if you guys are looking for a movie night in that is looking for an exploration of crime and law enforcement and the thankless job that law enforcement can be sometimes, I think those three films will form a really good trifecta. And that's sort of the goal for this pod as well. So let's talk a little bit about Kannur Squad. The first theme that comes through in Kannur Squad, because Kannur Squad is essentially an investigation and sort of closing out the investigation by actually going out and catching the perpetrators, right? Like, so that's the fundamental premise of Kannur Squad. The investigation is carried out by a small group of police officers who are not like very senior in the police cadre, but are extremely well respected for their sort of investigative abilities. And so I think like you'll notice that there's a similar theme in Kuttavum Sikshayum, which is streaming on Netflix. And Dheeran Adhigaram Ondru, I'm not sure where Dheeran is streaming. Guys, do you know where Dheeran is streaming?
I think it's Hotstar, but I'll confirm that.
Okay. We'll start with sort of the investigation part of the films. I thought the Kannur Squad investigation itself was quite truncated. There was really never any huge sort of like, process to finding the people who did it, or there was no whodunit aspect to the investigation, which is a little bit different, I think, from Kuttavum Sikshayum, where there was quite a bit of investigation and sort of like the mechanics of it, versus Dheeran Adhigaram Ondru, where you already know who the criminals are, right? And so I want to talk a little bit about what you guys thought about the investigation in Kannur Squad first, and then we can do a compare and contrast to the other two films. Adi, why don't you get us started?
I found the film to be like, as an investigative thriller, I think it does the job very well. And it's, if we look at the case itself, it's this is obviously more of a...
you're talking about Kannur Squad now, right?
Yeah, I'm talking about Kannur Squad. We'll get to the comparison later. But the Kannur Squad, for the most part, it involved, lots of the investigative aspects of what this team does, and how there's also a lot of how much this team is... there is a little bit of respect for this team, but at the same time, this team is not necessarily the first one to go to in the police department itself. I was surprised that there was this wide-ranging protest that happens this case, the case involving quite a brutal and violent break-in and very and which becomes murder and rape. I mean, it's going to be a spoiler, full of spoilers. For that serious case, bringing in this squad after all the protests and after everything happened, that I thought was quite interesting. It's also interesting in the aspects for me that these are police officers who are not really seniors in the department, and they are still ASIs, and they are so that is another reason why this dynamic comes into place, where they are not the first go-to people, even though they have solved successful tricky cases in the past that we are told about. In fact, when the film started, it starts with a very messy moment for Mammootty, which makes us think that okay, this is going to be another one of those films, but it actually doesn't. Except in a very few sprinkles here and there. I think that is the part that I really like. There are some parts that I don't think I really enjoyed, or probably I found it to be, maybe some bad decisions here and there, but we'll get to that later. But I liked how the screenplay progressed. Like, it's actually a pretty long movie, and if you never feel it, as a thriller, I think it really worked.
Yeah. So I also loved Kannur Squad. So I thought it is one of it's another one in a long line of police procedurals that Malayalam cinema seems to do so well. I actually loved that movie, and it was a very engaging watch. As Adi said, it was a little long, but you didn't see the length of the movie as it goes, and it has a lot of the, like I was telling someone on Twitter the other day, it has a lot of the issues that you see in other police procedurals with respect to how under trials and, accused are treated by policemen, and the torture methods are used and whatnot. And that's in this movie as well, just as you see it in other movies. But here it's, this story is shown as based on a real story, just like Dheeran Adhikaram Ondru, that we'll probably talk about a little later. I think both these movies are real movies. So some of these things that you see on screen are straight out of real life. So what I also liked about this movie is it doesn't show the cops to be superhuman. It balances that, the cinematic moments that you see on screen with which offers enough space for Mammootty to be the superstar that he is. At the same time, shows a lot of the personal dynamics between the team of police officers and the struggles that they go through in real life while balancing their work as a squad, which seems to be outside the ambit of your normal, policeman that inhabits the police stations and the crime scenes that you see on a daily basis, both on screen and in real life. These are plain clothes men that seem to be called in whenever there is something that the local police or the regular policemen think are outside their realm of expertise, right? So in that sense, they are called in only when others fail. So this also puts a little pressure on them to get things happen. They also have their individual faults that are also shown, the issues that they face while they go through their daily work. I think it's shown while you don't see the families a lot, which other cop movies typically show you, right? They show you how the family dynamics are, but this touches upon those family dynamics without necessarily showing those families every single time, right? So I think that's why the focus stays on the investigations and how they go about their work, and I think that's what makes this movie a little engaging. In comparison, I like the moment I finished watching the movie, I thought it reminded me of Dheeran Adhikaram Ondru. I have not seen the other Rajiv Ravi movie that Deepak was talking about. Dheeran actually is playing on Amazon Prime, so you can also go watch it. I think what makes this movie different is, as Deepak said, this is about the squad, and while Dheeran was about Dheeran, the cop, the head of that team is Dheeran, and that's whom the story revolves around, even though Bose Venkat has a peripheral role as well, but Kannur Squad is more about the entire squad, and while Mammootty gets some scenes, like I said, to show his superstardom, it's a lot more about the squad and how they work together. I think that's what made this movie a much more engaging watch.
Ananta, I'm surprised that you did not mention the how much cell phone tracking technology has sort of infiltrated the how cops find criminals these days. I thought that would be a pet thing that you would show, especially because
it's been normalized so much, right? It's been normalized so much.
Where they're like other details getting.
No, I mean, it's been normalized so much. I like it just seems so normal these days.
Yeah, basically, it has become the one freedom we have willingly surrendered to the government, right? Like, just
correct.
Yeah, I want to be able to talk to anybody or see anybody at any given point in time, and so in return for that, I will allow you to know every single one of my movements. Kind of thing.
But
that's a willing trade-off the public has made.
Yeah. But see, the thing that I want to highlight, while it's so normalized, it is just another bit of technology, much like facial recognition or biometrics, which is not an actual science, right? I want to talk about this other point in some time, but if you've listened to the first serial, right, the podcast about Hyman Lee's murder, and have you guys listened to Serial, the podcast that made podcasts popular?
I have.
Yeah, the first one everyone did. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So a crucial piece of evidence that linked the killer, the accused killer, to the murder is his cell phone location is actually giving him an alibi, right? But they don't bring it up, but they say it's circumstantial and it's not exact and whatnot. Same thing here. So they use this as if it's completely, you know, foolproof, but it's not really foolproof. Much like biometrics and facial recognition, which is all based on probability. Like I'm not 100% sure about cell phone towers and, you know, how they track, but I'm sure it's not exact either.
Yeah, maybe I'm wrong. Adi, I think you were about to say something as well about this.
No, yeah. So I was going to add that it's like it's cell phone, and then it's also how like CCTV has pervaded in every place, and that it's almost like encouraged to have CCTV in any be it your home or be it just a PPCO booth. The CCTV is just everywhere now.
Yeah. We've all surrendered ourselves to the security, I don't know what to call it, the security surveillance industrial complex or whatever, they, you know, whatever the right terminology is. I think like that's the most, the fact that these films are made in different points in time, the prevalence of these technologies is kind of what has become more and more stark, right? Like, the investigation becomes more and more dependent on the guy who's sitting at the computer and who is looking across service providers and able to locate a cell phone somewhere. I think that that character is just like become more and more prominent as these
models. How Simon Pegg says in Mission Impossible, I'm just the computer guy.
Exactly. It's like, you know, it's like the in the Spider-Man movie, right? Like they have the sidekick, the guy in the chair. Like that, the guy in the chair is the de facto member of the squad.
And to add to that, the guy in the chair in Kanu Squad, I was very, you can't miss it that even though like they are... like touring India, as you know, Kishore's character says, they go from Bombay to UP to like almost to Nepal border, and this guy is awake all the time. Like this guy, most of the time, get off, doesn't even know where they are, but then he has to be there for them, like because they'll call anytime.
And I thought that was the best part of the screenplay, is that even his character, it recognizes the importance of that character, and it gives that character an arc, right? Because when it starts, right, he's like, oh my God, these guys have come to annoy me again. And by the end, he's sitting there and cheering when the team eventually catches the people. Right?
And it was also, it's quite a, you know, the whole turn of events, how Kishore has to use him to get to these guys.
Yeah, exactly. He becomes a gatekeeper to the people who are remote. Yeah, exactly. I thought that was, that I think was like my favorite part of the screenplay, right? Like the rest of the stuff is like what I would call standard good screenplay writing, right? I would call that like, yes, if you, this is a good screenplay.
Yeah, it has all the procedural aspects of.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Right? It is like, okay, you want to create a team. You cannot have a team where everybody gets along all the time. Let's create a rift. Right. And then you have one person who, despite the rift, is able to hold the team together. And that person becomes the most important character in the investigation. And like all that stuff like happens really well in Kanur Squad. It's not bad, but it's not stuff that you haven't seen before. But this identification of this character who, you know, who is theoretically not part of the original team, but then becomes part of the team because of A, the invaluable service that he is able to provide, and then B, because he then slowly and gradually invested in catching these killers, right? Like, that I thought was like a truly net new thing in screenplay writing that I really enjoyed about Kanur Squad. And one I don't think, like, for example, I think that character is there in Kutavum Siksayum, but is not as well fleshed out. At least that's
yeah,
my
memory. Yeah, it's not as well fleshed out, yeah. I mean, that's the kind of character that's there in all these procedures, because at some point, someone's going to use the cell phone to track one person, even though in this, it goes on for multiple times they use him. But there's always one character unnamed, and he is used once, he or she is used once, yeah.
Yeah.
No. So I wanted to ask this one question though. So this character that you talked about, the guy who tracks the cell phones, right? He becomes pivotal. He's probably the single most important character in the whole thing to who helps them catch these guys, right? So he's the one who's in the background. But I want to figure out, I'm not sure how real the character is, because the reason I say this is this, as Adi was saying, most of these crime series and crime movies that we see these days have one such character sitting in the background tracking phones, because it's become that ubiquitous, right? There was a series called Delhi Crime. I think again it was in Prime. I think this was about the first season.
No,
was
Delhi
about
Crime
the,
is Netflix. Delhi Crime is Netflix.
Oh, Netflix. Yes, the first season was about the Nirbhaya rape case, right? So there's similar guy who sits, Delhi police guy who sits in the police station and tracks phones. And he's the most demotivated person in the whole team, because he just does not want to stay there. He thinks like everybody's troubling him all the time. So that arc stays the same there. So I'm wondering, like, that's a stark difference from this guy, where you see him change and, like, you know, start rooting for them and, you know, almost become excited when they are excited in the same way. So I'm wondering how real it is. But as you said, this is pivotal, and he gets a nice story arc, which is great about this movie.
Yeah, I think like this is much more fantasy, right? Like Delhi Crime is rooted in the Delhi Crime is rooted in sort of like how ineffectual day to day law enforcement can be, right? You know, almost this. I think like Kanur Squad and Kutavum Siksayum to some extent also is about how thankless the job can be, and yet they still continue to do the job. So they, like, I think like this is a little bit more fantastical in that sense. Kanur Squad is a little bit more fantastical in that sense. Though I will say, if he was spending so much time with this team, he probably thought everyone else who was sending him a request, because he is just one guy, right? I'm sure he gets multiple other requests for multiple other investigations. He was treating all of those investigations poorly. Is probably my take. He couldn't have been servicing these guys so well, and then like also servicing others in the same level of dedication. That's not possible.
But it's probably the intended takeaway is that there aren't as good teams as.
Yeah, exactly. That's also the thing, right? Like, if you look inherently in the Kanur Squad team also, they're barely keeping it together, man. Like, one guy is not there for the delivery of his child. The other guy is, like, family, and everybody is, like, looking down on him because he tried to do something to get some money. It's not like they're not all operating under the most ideal of circumstances. Like, clearly, you know, like there's no, what is it called? There's no resting and vesting happening in the police department, or quiet quitting is not an option for these guys.
Yes, and I didn't find it curious that these all most like both Kutum and this film. I mean, at least I thought that both the films want to look at the police officers in a more in a sympathetic light. At least the kind of officers that they project in these films as leads or as the main team. Which also speaks to what Kishore, who plays the senior officer. And he's interestingly named Manmohan Deshpande, and he's actually the Tamil guy. He talks about how 80% of the police officers work looking at the clock, and there will be 20% like this team who work like 24/7. And I'm not sure I really, not about buying it, I don't know whether it needed to be there. But because that kind of underlined what the movie was trying to say, like it put it in words rather than the film that was actually doing pretty much the same for the most part.
Yeah, I didn't find that part sort of very effective, honestly. Right, like if you go talk to any executive in any corporate situation, they will all say the same thing. It's just the basic Pareto rule, right? Like 20% of your workforce gives you 80% of your output, right? Like that's what like most people believe, or at least that's kind of the belief of like statistically that's what people believe is true. Now the piece that doesn't really, or the piece that the film examines, but it doesn't really get examined in the speech, is sort of how you treat those 20%. And I think that's what the film banks on. Every viewer, right, who's ever in any sort of, been in any sort of work situation, always views themselves as part of that 20%. No one thinks that, oh, we are the 80% that is not contributing outsized value. But they all believe that they are the 20% who's contributing outsized value and yet are treated poorly. That is the entire reason this film is so successful. Because no one believes that they are part of the 80% that is like coasting and like, they're being justly rewarded by their work. I don't think anybody believes that.
No, that's true of Dhiran as well, because when in Kanru Squad, if you say that the other police officers are ineffective, right? In Dhiran, it's not so much about how effective the other police officers are. They are prone to apathy, right? So it's Dhiran who says, you guys, and everybody says, there's so many people dying out here. There's so many crimes happening. Why are you getting worked up over this one, right? And Dhiran is the one who's actually seen how gruesome these guys are and how cold-blooded these guys are and how they kill. And he's affected by that. And he brings that point up. You guys will just sit here in apathy until someone important dies, and then you'll all spring into action. I'm waiting for that day, Abdin, he says, right? So in that sense, Dhiran is that. And I think there must have been 5 or 6 police officers that he addresses in addition to his boss when he makes this presentation and says this, right? So in that sense, Dhiran sees himself, or Dhiran is part of the 20% who wants to approach this case.
Yeah, that's why he's the protagonist. Why he's the protagonist. Because everybody wants to identify with that kind of protagonist, right? Correct. Because they all feel that they are sort of like, everyone feels wronged by their employer at some point. Like that kind of happens all the time.
So I think this 20% on screen, the 20% being shown on screen is actually a feature. And I'm pretty sure, like I want to believe that the number of people or the percentage of police officers and who are part of the workforce that actually believe in doing good, I want that to be more than 20%. I'm hoping it's more than 20%, and it's only because we want to show them on screen do we pigeonhole them into this 20% number.
No, actually, there's two points I want to make. There's two points I want to make. One is the fact that they punch out at five is not the issue. I want to make that case very strenuously.
Exactly. It's not the amount of fine you put in. It's about
exactly. It's not the point. If you're there, if you're true to your job and you're not corrupt and you follow sort of the basic protocol and etiquette of being a law and order professional, then I think it's still fine. Right? In the same way, let me go back to the film itself. I don't think Kishore's speech needed to be there. You know, right? Like, they could have had a very different speech because Kishore's point is made fantastically by the film itself. He doesn't need to make that point, right? Because very simply, take the case of that guy who in the chair, right? He went from being in the 80% to the 20% as a result of this chair. So that's one, right? Second is, they paint the same story again in another place. There is the constable who's supposed to help them in Bombay, who is a punch out at five guy. And then there is Lokesh, who comes all the way with them to Nepal border, which is well outside his jurisdiction, just to help them. Right?
Correct.
So the film keeps making this point over and over again. I didn't need the underline at end. I wish Kishore had a much better ending speech. That's what I'm trying to say. So those are the two points I had to make. One is, like, it makes the wrong point, which is that the speech is wrong in the sense that, like, the issue is not that they punch out at five. The issue is that they're, like, when between the 9 to 5 that they do, they're off drinking chai and, like, samosa and, like, you know, the fact that when they punch out of clock, he's going to see some dolly or something, you know, like the constable has this picture of this, like, supposedly loose woman that he's going to go see or whatever. Like that, it also makes that kind of commentary about the people who are 9 to 5, which I didn't like at all. So I found that very troublesome. Like, you shouldn't sort of, like, pass judgment on the people from 9 to 5.
And also at the same time, like you said initially, it's not confined to just the police force or something. It's everywhere, right?
Yeah, exactly. This is not a law and order thing. This is a everywhere thing. The thing is, like, because law and order is essentially perceived to be sort of a giant public service, the pain is felt more like acutely. That's all, you know.
So which is why I feel the need for a proper documentary type production for, like, that shows how some of these essential services really work. But, like, we don't have, like, I, so as part of, like, when I watched this when I watched the movie and I watched Dhiran again, right, I on YouTube the other day I chanced on this channel, and it was an interview with a journalist talking about what was being on the Japan trailer. The Japan is a new Karthi movie, right, that just released a couple of weeks ago. So they were talking about the trailer, and apparently that story is based on a real guy from Tiruvarur who, like, you know, whose most famous crime was to break into Lalita Jewelry in Trichy, right? And they were talking about how he's, like, when you see him, he's an everyman. You will not say he's a criminal, and how the police caught him, and how, you know, a police from a neighboring state, like, swooped in and, you know, tried to steal him away, to take away the jewels that he had stolen, and, you know, present it as, you know, stuff that was stolen from their own state, blah, blah. So it was an account by a journalist about crime. So I'm saying, some of when you listen to those accounts, right, they are much more realistic, and they show you, they tell you that police officers are real people. They actually tell you a lot more about them without resorting to the generalizations that you see in screen, both in Kannur Squad and in some ways in Dhiran, right? So I think there is a vast untapped market for sort of a real crime broadcast, to put it, you know, to narrow it down, where someone, like, takes up, like, a crime like this and talks about all the angles that are there to show you how people think, whether it's a criminal or the law enforcement, how they went and resolved it, and how it'll present these things in a much more clearer manner than these movies, which tend to pigeonhole people in ways that shouldn't happen.
Yeah, I think like to draw broad-based conclusions about police work from films is probably not a good thing, right? Like the focus of a filmmaker is their narrative that they want to push forward. And they will always only pull out the things that are universal, not specific to police work. Right, so the things that you see, if you might be able to pull out universal themes and apply to your life and your work, but like that doesn't mean that you have fully understood what it means to be a cop. It's just like they are going to present the most universal parts of the job. There is no way they can make it. You know, there's like, for example, there's no way you can make real the fact that you just have to stand in the sun for hours together waiting for a car to drive by. Right, like that's somebody's posting. You know. You can't, like, you can never understand that. So that's one. Second is, I think, like, just broadly, everybody reduces law and order to be just an extension of the state. And that right down to the last final constable wielding a lathi and trying to keep a protesting crowd out of a place is just a tool of the state, you know, right? Like, they try to presented that way. I think like these films sort of help to just hold that narrative at bay for like a few seconds, right? Just to remind people that like law and order, like there are people inside those uniforms. They're not just the uniform. In fact, Kannur Squad is kind of funny because they never wear uniforms for most of the film. So from that perspective, it's kind
like
of
even in the photograph, the team is the only one without the uniform.
But they actually end of the movie, they actually show the real squad in a photograph, and there they are in khaki.
Yeah, so, obviously because those
it's
are
more of a cinematic
like, official release. The official release pictures will have them in uniform. Yeah, for sure. Cool. Which brings me to sort of the next topic, which is how do you guys think the team dynamic played here? Were you guys convinced about for example, there's a scene like 2/3 of the way through the movie where this festering feud between two team members just breaks out right at the point where they need to go find the perpetrators of the crime. I thought that was the most convenient part of the writing for me. And so I wanted to talk to you guys about how you thought the team dynamic between the four main members of the squad was, and compare that to say Dheeran, where there like really is no focus on the team at all, versus Kutavun Sikshem, where I thought the team members got a little, like Sunny Vane and Sharafuddin, and got a little
both
bit
Sunny
more.
Vane and Sharafuddin are very good in it. Yeah,
exactly. So you get a little bit more of them in the film as well. So like I wanted to get I mean, Adi, maybe we can start with you because you mentioned Sunny Vane and Sharafuddin.
Yeah, with respect to like Kannur Squad, that scene where they are rushing to basically catch a train in which the two puppets are traveling, and this guy gets a call, and then it just spirals into their it reaches a point of where this guy was supposedly Jain, I think, who supposedly had this case going on about that he's taken bribes, and the other one, Jules, doesn't approve of him being part of the team anymore. I thought that scene was unnecessary in the larger scheme of things. It sort of puts the it kind of breaks the screenplay where it was going, but I also think there is this a very crucial element to this scene that I thought was it was more than their issues between each other. The scene was purely there for George Mammootty's character to bring up that he is fighting this case for that girl who was raped, and this this dialogue was the sole reason I thought the scene was there, and not necessarily to I mean the animosity developing between these two officers was just a catalyst for someone like George to say this line, and that line itself comes up because George meets with the girl in the hospital, and she recounts what happened that night in her house, and he's moved to I mean, he's of course taking the case, but he's also moved in a very personal capacity. And I was not sure if this whole thing was necessary, because if you see, the film starts with something that is completely unrelated. They want to show it's a prologue. You have a supposedly suicide case in the forest, and we have a mini Kannur squad happening in that 2015 where they travel from Kannur to all the way to Coimbatore to solve this case, and it has pretty much no relation to this the main story, but it is just to introduce us to the team and how far they can go to solve a case and how good they are at solving the case. And when they are built up as these very sincere officers, and they will take a case like this and do everything possible in their capacity to solve it, I was not sure if this added motivation for George was really necessary in the larger scheme of things. It's probably, I don't know how, maybe script writers think that there needs to be an emotional connect to the audience. And when Mammootty has a mass sequence or the team has a mass sequence, you need to be emotionally connected to it and shouldn't come across as cold. But I thought that there was this too strong reason for this whole sequence. And that, in the larger scheme of things, didn't work for me, because I was already invested. I already knew the team, and the team doesn't need this extra motivation to go solve the case.
Yeah, I agree. I felt that was like extremely gratuitous, and it takes away from some of that straight-laced nature of investigative work that comes through in Kutavum's Extreme, right? Like, there's no... It's a bunch of jewelry going missing in Kutavum's Extreme, and there's no right... You don't need that there's no emotional connect to the victim needed to solve the crime. You have to solve the crime because that's your freaking job. Solve the fucking crime. Like, that's the, like, that kind of, like, is the part that I thought was, like, a bit of an unnecessary distraction. And then making it a, like, I don't, like, I'm not opposed to there being rape in films or something, but here it truly felt unnecessary, right? Like, I don't need to believe that these perpetrators are so evil that a cop would go to the such lengths to catch them, etc. Like, those are the things that, like, really, this here to absolutely felt gratuitous that was there. Ananta.
Yeah, so that's what I think Dhiran does a little better. While there is this offhand reference to Karthi getting nightmares of, seeing the faces of all these victims, particularly that young girl who was also raped. But I think what drives him more is, I think, his wife and the trouble that she is going through because she got in the way of the criminals, right? So, but it doesn't do it the same way as Kannur Squad does, which as you said, this was not really necessary. It's like, there's enough motivation for them to go solve a crime because it is their duty or it's a job, right? I don't know if, I don't know whether it was needed, as you said. So, but in terms of team dynamics, right? One of the things that I felt is in Kannur Squad, I thought the individual team members had a little bit more agency with Mammootty's character George steps in and sort of leads them only when he thinks they are going off track. Whereas in Dhiran, he's the leader and he's the one who like he leads every single bit of the way. He's the one who directs them to do this, do that, do this, do that. He's the one who plans everything and whatnot. Whereas in Kanu squad, I think these guys are senior enough that they get some agency, while in Dhiran, they're all newbies who have actually been handpicked because they are new and they will follow directions from Dhiran. So I think that's the difference between the two treatments, so to speak. And but as you said, I don't think they needed any more motivation than the actual fact that the crime was gruesome enough for them to go find out who these criminals are and catch them. Yeah.
There are some offhand references to how the teams were built. Of course, in Dhiran, they don't talk about team building at all. But in
Kutchavam Kitchen also. They do because okay. In Dhiran, there's a particular sequence where they say, pick these new guys because they will go and they'll be energetic enough to
okay.
solve it. Whereas the senior guys will go all around the country, sit in a hotel room, stay quietly and then come and say,
we couldn't find.
So there's a reference to that. But I think that's also why the teams work the way they work in both these movies.
Yeah, because I know in Kutumb Section, there's a scene where either Sunny Wayne or Sharafuddin, somebody says, like, this is where Asif Ali picked me up from, or like, you know, like, that's where I was made to join the squad. Same with here also, right? Like, either Ronnie or somebody says, like, this is where I got added to the squad or something like that. So you get this sense that this was not these people are just not thrown together, you know, like they were handpicked and the team was actually formed. And this idea of forming a team and getting the right composition of the team and stuff is like, it's good to see those things happening, you know, being portrayed correctly. Because like, come on, in real life, like no one actually, it's not one person. It's not like Dhiran is sitting in, it's not Sherlock Holmes sitting in with a cap and a pipe and solving the stuff by themselves. You know, like that's like a complete, that would be completely fantastical. And so it's good to see that. It's good to see that sort of reality being reflected. But I think it's also good from the other point, from the point of view of film, because it allows more ensembles. I think like it's good just for films to have meaty characters written, good actors playing them. And, you know, just it's just good to write teams in films for that very reason. And so that's I think like the good part of like having a team dynamic and having that captured in the film.
So I wanted to ask how true is the actual crime that these guys go and investigate in Kannur squad? I know the squad was real.
The squad was real. I don't know if the specific crime is real.
Like Dhiran was mostly real, I believe. But and they had to change some of the names because they were getting pushback from people who were not named, but actually the tribes that were named. So I think that part, like because of that, they had to change a few things. But the case itself was
yeah. So you can clearly see that in Kannur squad they bypass all of that, right? They don't want it to politically. Correct. Kannur squad gets that part right in the sense that they purposely make sure that the villain is also Malayali.
Correct. Right?
They pay purpose. They like it's a big because it's a big political quagmire in Kerala to sort of like talk up like to just indict North Indians like that, because there's a lot of migrant labor in Kerala, and there's sufficient tension between local unions and migrant labor and wages and you know all of that stuff. That if they just made a movie sort of like branding them as criminals, similar, like in basically that's what Dhiran does, right? Like,
lots of xenophobia, like underpinning the movie because, like, when they show the staking out happening, they show, you know, North Indian couple selling carpets who are also staking out the potential targets. So, they might come back and tell you it's real, but I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. The problem is that you don't. It's. I mean, no one's saying these things are impossible, The problem is when you see it as a when you see it on screen, right? Like the impact on the audience is quite different.
That's why I said there is a market out there for real true crime stories, because this YouTube video I was seeing, right? And like I told you, that Tiruvarur guy who also did a lot of crimes, lot of robberies, and ended up breaking into Lalita Jewelry. The first people that were caught as suspects were a bunch of laborers working in Trichy who were from Jharkhand. Like 10-15 people they rounded up, and like, you know, they literally seemed to have tortured them into giving them a confession. But not, all of them said, we're not this, we did not do this. So that those are the first people that get picked up anytime there's a crime that's happening, apparently.
Yeah, of course. The remake J Beam for migrant workers. Like, you know.
Yeah. You could, yeah.
Hey Adi, welcome back. We're talking about how Kannur Squad manages to bypass some of the underlying xenophobia that is there in Biran by making the antagonists very clearly Malayali and Malayali speak.
Yeah, and that is also in the scene, right? In the like both Kutum, Shikyum, and this one has that the whole village sequence. I mean, I think Dhiran also does, and it is very the village itself is very carefully designed in such a way to, you know, to give that this place is a whole other. I mean, it's understandable that these are police officers from a different state, and therefore they wouldn't know some nitty-gritties of this new state. But at the same time, it is so foreign, and it is so projected as sometimes as savages, or sometimes as something that is that even, you know, that a normal human condition cannot understand sort of situation. And I think that this film it's a little bit there, but I mean, at least for some Masi sequence that they needed, they built up in that way. But the main antagonists itself are Malayalis, and that way it does bypass the whole thing.
All right, I think we've covered three big topics. One is the investigative piece. The second is the team and sort of how the team is constituted. The third is the xenophobia and how migrant workers are targeted. The fourth and final piece I wanted to talk about is the eighth wonder of the world, also known as Mammootty, who consistently seems to find and produce you know, fantastic films, both within his own production house and towards the back end of his career. I mean, George, the character that he plays in this film, is not a wholly new character for him. He plays something similar in Unda as well. Yeah. But, you know, Unda is far enough back that people might have forgotten about it, which is why people are willing to see him reprise this type of character. But he's so good. He knows when to sort of back off and give other people room in a scene. And he knows he's going to get his flowers, you know, and he continues to pick tight scripts that also seem to have, you know, large enough sequences that sort of match his star stature. Like Bhishma Parvam, for example, right? Like, he is not there in the film for like extended periods of time. He barely shows up.
Yeah.
But no one will question that it's a Mammootty film, right? Like, same here. Like, he's not in the film for periods of time, and no one questions that this is a Mammootty film. I mean, this is not Nanbagal Nerathmayakam, you know, like, that is full. He's in every scene almost, right? Like, that is, he carries that film. That's not the case here. And yet, there is never any doubt that this is a Mammootty film. The fact that he still is able to play a 30 to 40-year-old is a medical miracle. But other than that, just props to the guy, I say. Like, he keeps picking great film and manages to not tarnish his legacy in the way that many actors of his generation have managed to do. Like, I literally can't think of anyone else who's as prolific as him. Like, for example, people who say like Nazir or whatever, but Nazir is not as prolific as Mammootty at this point in time. You know, like, there is literally no one else in I think India who one can say is of Mammootty's generation, is as prolific as Mammootty is, and is as good as Mammootty is in both selection of scripts and delivery of roles. And I think he's like in a category of one at this point. So a little bit on that from the rest of the group.
Yeah, and I think there was, I mean, it'll be very, I'm very curious about what exactly happened in you know, in the post 2018 Mammootty, because he did have extended period of like around 8, maybe even more than that, probably a decade, like Mohanlal, where they were in these
making absolute shit movies.
Yeah. And something happened in after 2018 that, I mean, there's still a handful of you know, films that are forgettable. But then if you look at his films, like, you have a Undaan, Peranbu in 2019, and then you have Bhishma Parvam and Puyo, and you have even Rorschach, actually interesting. It's also one of those, you know, a Mammootty film in the very strictest sense, but it has some moments. And then you have this year he's just in on, like, going like even better, and then he's doing a film with I think Rahul Sarsam, who directed Bhoota Kalam next. And so I think it's very a curious thing about what exactly happened, that he kind of slightly changed course to do some of these films. And he also, of course, also started the production company, and almost his production company is going great, the kind of films that he has. So yeah, this you can't even call this like second innings. Like, this probably is like fourth, fifth innings or whatever. And for someone to have that, like you said, there is clearly like, no comparison.
This is like Jordan coming back on the Wizards and scoring 45 points a night. Like, yeah, that's exactly what this is. It's like, it's crazy.
See, the prolificness is one thing. The kind of roles that he has done, right? They're also like spanning the whole spectrum. Like, you can't pigeonhole him into anything at this point. Like, he's still doing the massy box office grossing movies like he has always done, right? I just read that CBI 5 was grossed a lot in the box office, which was last year. Like, he did Unda in 2019, Nanpagal Nerth Mayakam, Peranbu, now this. Like, he's done more. He's done critically acclaimed movies, he's done box office, he's done thrillers, he's done comedy, he's done doing everything there at this point. Like, that's why he's like a club of one. I definitely agree there. Awesome. I don't know about you guys, but like, then this is going back to 2010, but Pranchiyatan and the Saint is one of my favorite Mammootty movies ever. I don't know whether you've seen it. Like,
yeah, absolutely. It's a Ranjit movie, right? Like, it. Yeah. So I think the thing is, I think we were talking about, there was a decade where Mammootty was making terrible movies, right? Like, but I'm just going to be very frank, right? Like, the movie where he has that Trivandrum accent, and basically the movie that made Suraj Venyaramud's career, it's not a good movie, right? Like, I know a lot of people laughed and people thought, oh yeah, finally Mammootty can do comedy and all that stuff. But like, it's not a good movie, right? But at the same time he was making those movies, he was also making Karcha and Padungu with Blessy, and he was making Pranjayatan. And somehow, the fact he still managed to make one or two good movies in between all the crap. And I think what's happened as 2018, 2019, he basically just stopped making the crap and continued making those one or two good movies. Like, and whereas Mohanlal went pretty much the other direction. It's like he stopped making the good ones and he kept making the crap. And so, like, when I see Lal now, what I see is sort of an actor who sort of lost in his own image of himself. And when I see Mammootty, I actually see, like, there's still a little bit of Mammootty in the characters, but I actually am able to still see the character when I see Mammootty on screen, which is huge. Like, I mean, forget, like, this is not even like, let's just, like, being frank, right? Like, Kannur Squad is not at the level of Nanbagal Nerath Mayakam, where he's playing like three or four characters, even though it's like technically two characters, but he's also playing one character that's still lost in the other and stuff. Like, that is a whole nother level of, like, surrendering to the character. Kannur Squad, he's still Mammootty in some places, right? Like, he still has that avuncular presence and, like, he still, like, knows more than everybody else in this scene and all of that stuff. But he's still very, very good and he's still believable. Like, I do think of him as George. I don't think of him as Mammootty when I'm watching Kannur Squad, which is, like, I cannot say that about many other actors of his generation when I'm watching them in a film. Like, I can't even, like, it's very hard for me these days when I see Kamal on screen to not think of him as Kamal. Like, Vikram, for example, like, that Nermayana Kumban scene and all, like, it's like, it just doesn't work for me because it's like, that's Kamal. Like, that's not Vikram saying, yeah. You know, like, let's just be very, very frank. It totally takes me out of the film. And so, like, there's not a single scene like that in Kannur Squad. Like, there's a scene where he clearly knows everybody, but, like, he knows more than everybody. He's clearly realized that that the team is making a mistake and he needs to correct them and all that stuff, like, is happening. But not for a second do I feel like that it's Mammootty saying, chastising the team, or Mammootty trying to make the team do something else. Or, like, even that scene, right, where, like, the Jeep crashes and everybody else in the Jeep is hurt, but somehow miraculously Mammootty appears from behind a tree with a gun. Like, it's like total star scene, right? Like, there's no,
yeah, yeah.
Like,
that village scene also where he breaks out of that
yeah, it's like, that's a total, but, like, kudos to the filmmakers, because they've set it up in such a way that you know that George is capable of these things and it doesn't feel like it's Mammootty doing those things. It still feels within the realm of George doing those things. And so, like, good kudos for him for selecting the role, and but also the kudos for the filmmakers for, like, making that believable, I would say.
So I was just checking, so because you brought up Mohanlal, right? So I was just checking up their filmographies. For some reason, I thought Mohanlal was much more prolific, right? But no, it's actually Mammootty who's been much more prolific.
Mammootty has done much more movies
compared to Mohanlal, which is like blows my mind, because there's a lot more Mammootty movies that you remember than you can remember Mohanlal movies. I mean, Bro Daddy, okay. Drishyam 1-2, okay, but I can't remember a lot of movies.
Drishyam 2 is the last, this is the, basically the last, like,
yeah,
possible.
Like, since 2010 to now, I think, is Drishyam 1 and Drishyam 2 is what, like, Lal's basically, like, no.
Yeah, everything else, right? It's like, Lucifer is Masala, there was this, like, hideously made Itty Money, which I saw.
Yo, Itty Money and all, you cannot, like, I can't watch for more than a second. It's...
Bro Daddy, I didn't see, but Meera said it was good.
No, it's fine.
Bro Daddy was last year.
Yeah, yeah, it's fine. It's not, like, it doesn't hold a candle. Like, doesn't hold a candle to Lal's own films, you know? Like,
yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. So I thought Mammootty was much more selective, which is absolutely not true. He's actually done literally five, six movies every year, as opposed to Lal, who had years where he just two or three movies.
I remember someone did a count, like 2010 to 2020 for both of them. Like one has, I think Mammootty, like you say, has done some 65 films and Lal has done some 50 films and something like that.
Mm. Like, every year he's got at least five or six movies, Mammootty.
Yeah, good for him.
Yeah, but Dulkar's on record, right? Dulkar's on record saying that like the dad works more than me. Like he's always in filming.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Dulker is off building his own brand. So, like, he's not. Honestly feel like Dulker is so, like, he's so managed, man. Like, his every part of his public persona is managed. It's like the exact opposite of probably what his dad did in the 70s.
Yeah. You know? I mean, I think, like, I've heard, like, even within Kerala, like, they know Dulker as a Telugu or a Hindi actor. He's not, you know, even, like, you know, traditional Malayalam hero. Like, he doesn't, his Dulker, image is not
I don't
there.
Think so. Yeah, he doesn't, like, yeah. I don't think that's his thing. Like, he'll make a film or two in Malayalam. But I think he's, like, actively pan-Indian.
2022, he had one Tamil, one Malayalam, one Telugu, one Hindi.
Yeah. What was the Hindi movie in 2022?
Some Chup, Revenge of the Artist.
Oh, he did Chup.
Okay.
There's an award.
Balki movie written by Raja Sen and this one film critic.
Yeah.
No, but you're right. But you're right. He's more other language than Malayalam at this point. At least since 2018.
Cool. I wonder if he'll listen to this part and whether he'll have any sharp feedback for us. But
no, but anyway, I think we have to probably go back and do like a decade-wise breakup of Mammootty, Machan. I think there's enough there for us to talk about.
Dude, you
Mammootty.
Can do, like, if you do Mammootty, there should be a Mammootty podcast. So he's done. He's worked with all-time greats from the 70s to now. So, like, to the like, you know, just like, if you want to do a Mammootty retrospective, that's an entire podcast by itself. The interesting thing is, as we speak, a film where he's done a very interesting character is running in the theaters.
Like, correct.
Dude, like, it's like not even been 3 months since Kandur Squad came out. And he's out doing another film, man. That's what I mean by how prolific he is. So, congrats to him. And
no, I have
very,
to
very
give,
gratifying to see.
No, I have to give a lot. I mean, this is, we are not the first people to say this, but I think it speaks volumes about the Malayalam industry as well, because like it takes guts to take a script like this to a star like Mammootty and say, okay, can you do this? Right? I don't think
dude,
it,
like,
it
you
even,
know what he, you know the role he plays in Kadal, the core, right?
I know. It's still running, so I don't want to even talk about it at this point, but I'm saying it takes guts.
Yeah.
Right? When you see other industry, in Tamil for that matter, everybody is like heavily invested into the star. But in Malayalam, it seems the other way around, which is great.
No, but like the conception is different. Right? Like they like he knows, no one will question that Mammootty is a star. No one. Like just because he did Kannur Squad, or just because he did Kadal, or just because he did Nanbagal Nerathmayakam, right? Like, no one is going to question that he is a star. And he knows that. He has that luxury in Malayalam. And so, the idea is that if you have that type of bankability, that you can, it should free you, not cage you. Right? And unfortunately, every other industry, it seems to cage the artist. And somehow Mammootty has found a way to be free.
I think we are both talking about the same thing. I think it's the industry that drives it, not the star itself. Like,
no, I think I, it is. No, it's that's not true, right? Because, like, to be entirely fair, it's caging. It's starting to cage Prithviraj. It's starting to. It's already definitely caged Lal, right? So, I don't think it is a function of the industry. Like, I can't think of the last, like, Prithviraj makes a few intelligent bets here and there. Like, but ultimately, Lucifer or Janaganamana or Kadua, the only movie I thought he made a bet on and it didn't, like, but it didn't pan out was Gold. He made Alphonse Muthan's Gold that nobody liked, but I didn't mind it. It's fine. I would prefer Prithviraj make those kinds of bets as opposed to Janaganamana, where, like, he's still playing a, like, you know, a mass hero in Janaganamana just because he has a crutch and whatever, like he's still screaming, he's still breaking the fourth wall and screaming dialogues at the audience. Like that's what mass cinema in Malayalam is. So like it cages people everywhere except for Mammootty. Mammootty is the only exception that I see.
I think it helps that he's sort of a polyglot, right? Seems like he's well read. He speaks multiple languages, so I think it makes it easy for him to step out of Malayalam and go elsewhere where there's no image. That like every year he does some offbeat non-Malayalam movie. It seems at least the last few years.
He's done
one of those. Yeah.
Interesting. I didn't know that. I had to go look that up. Yeah, on that note, I think we should wrap up. It's getting a little late. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. As we mentioned, you can watch Kannur Squad on Hotstar, Kuttavum Sikshayam on Netflix, and Dheeran Adhigaram Ondru on Amazon Prime. These three films will make for a good back-to-back viewing for movie night. As you guys sort of think about how the law and order system is represented in our films across the South Indian languages. I hope you guys enjoyed listening to this podcast. We'll be back with another episode soon. Thank you. Bye.
Hey folks, this is Deepak, aka Complicatua on Twitter, and I wanted to personally thank you for listening to our latest episode. If you liked what you heard, please subscribe to The Other Banana on Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, or any of the other platforms where you listen to podcasts. Please do leave us a review and a rating, as it helps us drive visibility for our work. You can also view the team's writing or provide us feedback on our content at tobpod.com. We look forward to hearing from our listeners soon. Thank you.